Okay, the speaker for this morning is a very special person to me. When I came home in 2008, she was one of the first people that shared her honesty and with me and her story, her experience, strength, and hope. And I connected, and I felt me too. And it was my first seed of hope. So with that, I give you Roberta S. from the left field.
I'm an addict. My name's Roberta. And I'm like a marshmallow today. This program is unbelievable. Thank you, the committee. You know what? This is always one of my favorite retreats. I used to come up here a long time ago when they were first starting out. And over the years, you know, I just, whether it was financial reasons or whatever, I just, you know, didn't get up here for a while. And I'll tell you what, this weekend, and this is, it's in here. And I feel it when it's in here, and I feel it this weekend, and it's here. But you know what it is. And this is like what I love. I love that. But I, you know, and people work hard behind the scenes to keep that here. But it's really it's so simple when it's spiritual, and it's just the love, you know, and it's here. And I so try to find that today in places. You know, like I really try to seek it out and avoid all the other crap. Like I just really try, I need, it's my lifeline. And so I really try to find it, and I just keep doing the simple things, and it leads me to you over and over again, and to the ones that have it. And I don't mean to isolate anybody at all, not at all. To each his own, but this is like where I need to be. You know, this is where I need to be, right? Right here with you. And there was a time where I used to like to come up and do this, and it's not that past. I'm so vulnerable, and see, I was brought up so opposite of this. And I was brought up so opposite of love and communication, and I mean, it was opposite. But I want to thank the committee for asking me. This is truly an honor. It really is an honor to do this. Okay, I tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I grew up over on Penn and Main Street, the cusp of Lawrenceville, Bloomfield, and Garfield, and I covered all areas by the time I was 10. I was immediately attracted to the streets. I don't blame, this has nothing to do with my disease of addiction that I'm afflicted with. It has nothing to do with that. It has nothing to do. There were people from my neighborhood that went to chose college and, you know, jobs and things like that, and I didn't. But and we were all raised pretty much the same way. But this is my story, and I'm here to tell you my story. I grew up in a home where I had three siblings that were older than me. The closest one was 12 years older. And so my mother thought she was done having children, and when she just had gotten her first job, and she was very proud of that. In fact, she got it with Mrs. Sweeney, the school guards. They were starting school guard women, and my mother got a job with the school guards, which she was very proud of. And here she had to quit because she was pregnant with me, and she very much resented that. And I worked through that with my mother. I love my mother to death. And I got to sit with my mother the last 10 years of her life through Narcotics Anonymous. You showed me what forgiveness was about. And I can't even put that into words. Like that, there's no even words for that one. But my mother used to tell me she was sorry she had me. She wished she didn't have me. You know, things like that was cutting, but I didn't know that then. I thought I ruined her life. I took that on, and I thought I ruined her life, and I felt like that. I felt very ashamed and very guilty really young, and I was like all alone, and so I immediately went to the streets. I went out to those streets, and I went out there hard, young. I went out there and I smoked cigarettes and I sipped wine and I started running them streets and I found the place where I belong. And I found people that I thought cared for me and I cared for them. Loyalty was my middle name. I was loyal to the streets. I was loyal to the people on the streets. I would go down for people on the streets. That was all I had, was the people on the streets. I mean, and this is not a pity or you know, feel sorry for me type thing, but I mean, I was called things in my own house, like white trash and things like that, you know. And when I think about that, like, you know, words, I mean, they meant nothing to me that I thought then. Like, I took on a whole persona then behind words. But when I think about it now, if I see somebody, like, speaking to a child like that in a grocery store, like, it freaking kills me. Like, I mean, it's just very, just sad. But I went to the streets and I found my place. And I start running them. By the time I lost, I didn't lose interest in anything good. I never had interest in anything good. I was forced into school. When I went to school, I was restless. I was always looking outside and looking and thinking that I wanted to be there. And I would get out there, and then I wanted to be over here. I could never sit still. There was something stirring in me way back then, before the actual physical habit took place. The addiction was stirring inside of me, and it was I couldn't sit still. I was never satisfied. I wanted more. I was dishonest. I was stealing. I was cheating, I was manipulating, I was people-pleasing. I had all the things then, and that was before a physical addiction. People in my neighborhood, everybody got high. Everybody got high. The adults were in the bars. They were mill people, hard-working mill people. The adults were in the bars, the wives were bartending, the husbands were drinking, and the kids at that time in the streets, the drugs was unbelievable. It was open, it was on street corners, we was getting high, it was just there. There was the river crowd that did their little things down in the river. There was the reefer crowd. There was the pill crowd, and I graduated from each crowd in about 2 weeks. And I made it to the narcotic crowd in Leslie Park. And I was 11 years old. This boy looked at me, I looked at him. They said, stay away from him, he is dangerous. I looked at him, he looked at me, he ran past me, rubbed the banana popsicle on my neck, and I said, I love him. I didn't know how to have a baby. I never knew anything about nothing. I didn't know. I say nobody told me. Well, my mother never talked to me about nothing. Everything I learned about life, I learned from these kids that I was running the streets with. And none of us knew how you had a baby, or the, at least the boys might have, because I ended up having a baby. But I was pregnant and didn't know it. I was using every day. I was using every day. The older guys were robbing drugstores, and it was just the norm in the neighborhood. They were robbing drugstores. Every night a drugstore got robbed, and they would throw the perks and all that out, and they called us the brownies. And the brownies would go where they threw everything out, buried their stuff in the cemetery. We would rob them, and we would take their stuff. And I was doing that. And I was already on pills, drinking, smoking, anything I could get, that's what I was doing. And I ended up pregnant and didn't know I was pregnant. I remember the girl I just ran into a couple weeks ago. She grew up with us. She was one of the first ones I got high with. She said, she was an older, I always was with the older people. She said, "Do you remember that time I said to you, Berta, is Marty trying to feel you? If he is, you better tell us." And I went, "No, he don't, what do you mean feel me?" And a week later I go, "I'm pregnant." But I was 14, this big pregnant, running around Butler Street, getting high. No one ever said stop getting high. I never heard that. I never heard don't get high. I'm this big. I'm in a Catholic girls' school up in Garfield. I had to quit, which they said, "You can't come back to school anymore because you're pregnant." I went like this, yes. Like, I was like so happy. Now it's full time, run the streets and do what I want to do. I was running the streets and doing what I want to do. That was my attitude. I'm doing what I want to do as much as I want to do it with whoever I want to do it, and nobody can tell me anything. That's what I was, my attitude. I ended up having this little baby. We were down in the parking lot, and the older guys were teaching me how to drive. It was one of those little cars, Plymouths, with the buttons on the side, neutral drive, and I'm real big, and I'm driving around like this, and we're smoking weed, and cars like Cheech and Chong, and we drive to the zoo. I think the zoo was free then. We go in the zoo, we go in the photo booth. I can't get up. I gotta go to the bathroom. I can't get up. I said to the kid, I go, "I can't go." He goes, "You think you're having that baby?" I went, "I have no you." He goes, "Oh, we better get you home." We ran home, and my mother was not happy. She was not happy. She started screaming. They put me in the back seat of the car, took me over. And I don't even know if they came to the hospital. My friends came, though. The whole Lawrenceville came to the hospital, and they were they were there. I mean, they were there. They came in, they were loaded, they were getting high in my room. I'm getting high. I mean, I thought nothing of this, but they were there. My friends were always there. And, you know, they talk about a lot of deaths now, epidemic, and we were talking about that. It was epidemic then. I lost friends 14, 15, 16 years old from overdoses, and it really was all in threes. And I say it, we were talking this morning, you know, when it was like in the ghetto and in little neighborhoods, it wasn't nothing. I mean, you know, I didn't go to the bathroom for months, and nobody ever said anything about that, but now it's opioid-induced constipation. You know, now they have a pill for it, you know. Where back then, you were on your own. Like, you just stayed stuck, you know. I was like a brick in here, you know. I had to go to St. Francis Hospital several times. You got to do something. I needed surgery or something. I mean, it was bad. But anyways, I just had this baby, and that was it. I mean, it never stopped. I never stopped. I'm running around Lawrenceville. Never did I ever, no consequences that I saw yet, but this is what was really happening. I was losing out on an education. I was running the streets. I was totally unmanageable and totally insane. You know, they said this disease is hard to detect. It drives us to dereliction, and people cannot detect it. Because if you looked at me, you would not know that I had it unless you saw me and watched me all day long. But you had no idea what was going on up here. Fear, insecurity, terrified that somebody was going to find out, like, who I am. Shame. I had so much shame that it was like I was ashamed to even be living. Like, I just, if I wasn't with people like me, I could not walk into a room with square people and sit for 5 minutes. Like, I was so out of my element. I needed to be with you, who was like a burnout, strung out loser. Like, that's where I would not stray from you. I would not stray from you at all. I could not get a job. I tried getting a couple jobs, and that was just so, I would be so self-centered, fear would just like take over, and I didn't belong here. I thought they knew. I remember having this one job that somebody got me, and it was something like fouling or something, and the ladies were saying, do you want to go to the bingo Thursday night? And I'm like, ugh. Like, you know, I'd have to bring drugs with me and be in the bathroom. I could not. It was like my coping, my living, my best friend. I couldn't stop. Started going to detoxes, and I ended up loving detoxes. I would go to detoxes, dry out, just to get high, just to come out and get high. During one of the detoxes, I'll tell this and move on out of that, and then start getting into recovery here. But this is just like a, I tried to work Dr. Twersky. Okay, he's worked up the detox up the street from my house, and so I'm in there, you know, I'm messing around, you know, laughing, and you know, with the guys, hanging out, having fun, and this is a big joke, and I really don't get it, and I don't even know why I'm there. Somebody made me go there, whatever. And so I go to him, and before this was very popular, I didn't know where it came from, but we just to say things, you know, just anything. It's like cunning, baffling, and powerful. I said, I'm depressed, and I can't sleep. He says, let's see, Roberta, you're 18 years old, you're homeless. You have a 4-year-old son that you don't take care of, you've abandoned. Your family wants nothing to do with you. You don't work. You have no purpose in your life. He said, the police are calling here. They're going to arrest you when you walk out of here. He said, that's depressing. And he said, and your body will sleep when it's tired. And I looked at him, and here's what I thought. Why doesn't he like me? But you know, I never forgot that. He was the first one that gave me truth. Something happened at that moment when he gave me that truth. It started something happening. Somebody gave me truth. Everybody else was giving me stuff that they thought. He just gave it to me straight up, and it started something. And then I get hit with my first meeting. And I start hearing some things, but I was not ready. So every detox after that, I would look for people in detox that I thought needed help. And I started taking them to meetings. And I was serious. I thought, this poor girl, she needs help. And I would take her. There's a couple of them still here. And I would take them to the meetings and say, this works. This works. You got to get plugged in here and this works. I'll see you later. Because I really believe that it would never work for me because I was so a big mistake and I ruined people's lives and I'm unlovable and I can't stay here. Like, I believe that. I really believe that. I just kept trudging through it. And I left state. I became a runner. I would leave geographically, go cross country, wind up in the gutter somewhere, wind up beat up, not a victim. I volunteered for everything and everybody I ever got involved with. Just in dangerous, I wound up in the most dangerous places. I wound up thrown out of trucks in the swamps. I wound up in the Tenderloin District of San Francisco getting beat up. I just wound up in some really bad places. My idea of finding friends was whatever city I landed in, I went to the meth program and found people like me. And I left my son with my mother without ever asking her permission. Do you want to put your life on hold for 18 years and watch this child and raise him? And I'm never going to send you a quarter. I'm going to call collect, and when I call collect, you need to answer and you need to send me money. Like, that was how I felt entitled, totally entitled, and not a clue of what I was doing. Not a clue of what I was doing to that boy. Not a clue of what I was doing to my mother. Not a clue of what I did to my dad before he died. Not a clue of how I affected anybody. And I always say that my recovery, my true recovery, did not begin until 8 and 9. When I got on the 8th step and they said, first define harm. And I don't mean to jump that far ahead, but this is just what's coming up. And I had to define harm. I thought harm was, okay, I lied to them. I mean, I stole their wallet out of their bag or so. I thought that was harm. And I started to see the deep harm of consciously ignoring somebody, of gossiping, of judging, of just things like that on a deeper level. And I started to see how the hurt in people that loved me in their eyes, and how I just ran right over their life, like with nothing, like just expecting my mother to take care of my son and never even asking her permission, just leaving him and just expecting that she'd raise him and still raise me. When I think of that harm, and I started to do that amends after I discussed everybody with my sponsor that was on the list, because believe me, some of the people she said, do not go to. Do not go. Don't open that door yet. When I started seeing that, and I was just saying that this morning or yesterday, I also started going to a couple Naranon meetings because somebody said, you're on your 8th step, go a couple Naranon meetings. Just sit and listen. Listen how we affect people. And when I started to hear that and feel that, that really rocked me to the core. And I made a true decision, even though I had already decided early on that I'm done. I made a true decision on a deeper level that I don't ever want to put anybody through this again. I don't ever want to do that to anybody again. Anyways, what ended up happening to me, nothing worked for me. I couldn't hear. I was so clogged up with disease and so clogged up with whatever it is. It just is a lower power, whatever you want to call it. I just was on a self-destructive mission. That just, I wanted somebody to kill me. And I remember standing in front of a guy that he's dead now. And I remember him holding a sawed-off shotgun to my face. And I remember I said to him, go ahead. Go ahead and do it. I mean, I really wanted him to do it. I wanted this to stop. Like, I tried to stop the last 10 years that I was using, and I couldn't stop. I could not stop. We were just saying this yesterday, too. I was in a detox. And I went in there this time on my own, and I had people bringing drugs up, and I had a girl watching out for me. I'm getting high in the bathroom in detox, thinking, I don't know what I was thinking. I couldn't stop. I was terrified at the thought of not putting something in me, and I wasn't even feeling it anymore. It was just like a tornado, vicious cycle, that I was in a behavior habit of repeating and repeating and repeating, and I convinced myself that you do this till the day you die, and I hope I die soon. I remember hoping, my big hope was that I'm dead by the time I'm 30. I remember that. I hope I'm dead by the time I'm 30. Well, 30 came around, and I was still in it. And I get arrested. That was nothing unusual. Nothing unusual about that. And I'm in a house on Polish Hill. And the guy that's in it, it's funny, there's a couple of us in the program. Walt's one of them. There's a few of us in the program right now that this all went down in like an overnight affair. We all went down. Like the bowling pins. And we're all here today. We're here today. It happened as a result of that night. And I'm in Polish Hill, and this guy, Al, Sunday morning meeting, calls me. We were all partners. He calls me, he says, they are surrounding the house. Get rid of anything you have in there. Well, you know, I'm trying to get it in. I go like this. I don't give a... And I hung the phone up. There were babies in the house and everything. Next thing you know, the door just gets kicked open over the kids. The kids were on the floor. And they take all of us in the house. Well, I'm looking, you know, the girl whose house it was, of course, they take her off to the side into another room. I know what that's about. Yeah. They got a beater to shut her up, you know. But, and that's okay because I go like this. Here's what I do not hold any, none. Because we all take a role out there. Everybody takes a role out there. And, you know, it's all the game. It's the game. Everybody takes a role. We end up I'm in the county jail, I'm laying there, I know I'm going to be sick, but I haven't been feeling any of this stuff for months, years, whatever, but I know I'm going to be sick, and I'm laying there, and I go like this, I can't do this. I can't do it anymore. I can't do it. I've been prayed over, just like the book says. I've been prayed over. I've been beaten. I've been locked up. I've been counseled. In those therapy groups with the counselor, I always positioned myself beside the therapist, and when it went around the room, I told everybody what their problem was and what they needed to work on. And I've been every one of those things that it talks about in the book. It's already, I've been there probably 10 times over, and nothing was working. And I knew about Narcotics Anonymous. I came into meetings. I don't know. I didn't come to get notes signed. I signed my own notes. I wasn't playing. When they said, "Did you use today?" Yeah. Yeah, I used. I mean, of course I used. I never lied about that. Yeah, I got high. I mean, that's what I do. But I want to stop. But I thought you were somehow supposed to do something for me. I just couldn't get this. No, human power couldn't give it to me. Something was happening here. You were an attraction. You were attraction for me. But I couldn't stop. And I came for years thinking that something got to give here, but I didn't know what it was. Something got to give. But I didn't know what it was. I remember sitting in a meeting up Center Avenue and telling a buddy of mine sitting next to me, I said, next time I go out, like I would sit in the meeting and already I couldn't even listen or hear you. You said don't take the first one. I heard don't use the third day. I'm serious. That's the kind of stuff I heard. I mean, I know this is a mental thing. I haven't used a drug in 28 years, a little over 28 years. This is my problem today. I got to watch this. And this is why I have to stay plugged into you, because this is, I found a way to live with this. And it's by coming here regularly and giving back and putting this first in my life. This is first in my life. I heard things so backward, and I can still hear them backwards today. But anyways, what happened was I was in that cell, and I knew, they said they're going up Schaefer's next. They knew it, they told us. The party's over for everybody, they said that night. And they went up, we all wound up going down. But something happened to me. I'm in that cell, and I said, what do you do? What do you do if you don't use? What do you do? And I had been here. You told me every time I was here what you do when you don't use, but I just couldn't see it or hear it. And I was laying in that cell, and I answered my own questions like I always did. Well, you hang yourself. That's what you do. You hang yourself. And remember, I'm 30. I don't want to live past 30. I'm 30. So I go, okay, hang myself. That's a good idea. And I think about the people that haven't found this or got to that place where they heard it the way it is. I think of that. There's been thousands of people since I've been here that have come in and haven't heard it the way it is. And, you know, what do you do? I mean, what do you do? So anyways, I thought, well, you hang yourself. And I started to get sheep ready. And all of a sudden, I heard a guy from our neighborhood, and I'm not afraid of using last names. His name was Billy Newmont, and he was in the cell with me, but he really wasn't. He was in the cell with me, and he said, you never have to live this way again. Don't take the first one. And something happened to me at that moment. God knew exactly who to send to me and exactly what to say. He gave me the NA message. He wasn't really there, but he was here from the years of coming in and thinking that I knew what I was coming here for. I thought I was coming here to get a couple dollars off you. I thought I was coming here to just sit down a minute and get a breather. I thought I was coming here to get, you know, whatever it was, somebody feel sorry for me. You know, I thought I was coming here for all those reasons. But it turned out at that exact moment, I knew why I came here all those years. And it happened. I got smacked. And I got hit with this peace. And I didn't know what that was. I never had it in my life. Never had it. It was always chase, more, dissatisfied, shame, guilt, just everything on top of my spirit. And this hit me, and it just like opened up. I knew I was an addict, and I knew what that meant. Up until that second, I thought an addict was someone that can't stop using drugs, which is probably a big part of it. But I knew what an addict meant. Obsession, compulsion, I knew what it meant. Suddenly I knew what it meant. I didn't know that from a book. I didn't know that from therapy. I knew that from coming to Narcotics Anonymous and not even knowing that that's what I was getting. So I know when new people come in and I'm trying to give them this and talk. I know that most of the time they can't hear me. What they feel is how I treat them. That's the message, because they treated me. I don't ever remember anyone saying, "What'd you clean date? When'd you stop? Are you high today?" You know, I don't remember any, but nobody ever told me, and this is not my experience. My experience was not that, was not shut up and sit down. It was not that. My experiences was, come in here, we love you. We love you. That's my experience here. They showed me how to set up a meeting. They didn't say, "Here, come here, do this." Here's what they did. And I know who did it. It was Doc Talley and Dolores Howes. They sat, they got the coffee, and all these people were deceased, and I'm saying their name. They got the coffee, they rode me to a meeting, I sat in the back, I'm listening to them talk, and talk about God, and talk about the meeting, and talk about the program, and talk about the home group, and talk about sponsorship, and I'm in the back seat like, and they get to the meeting and they're pulling out the chairs and they're still talking and they're getting the coffee and they're still talking and they're making coffee and then they're going to the door and they're hugging people coming in and they're still talking and they're not sitting all together in a clique, they're spread out, they're grabbing a new person, they're talking, they're getting, and I'm watching them, and they were attraction, not promotion. They were attractive to me. And something that was the only thing in my life that was attractive was Narcotics Anonymous. And I kept coming here, and they took me to meetings. They didn't carry me. They didn't carry me. I got a set of headphones. I ended up going away for a year. I came out. During that year, I got plugged in. I got a sponsor. Dot sent me a book. Sent me a basic text. I got a sponsor. I started going to meetings when I could, when I would get passes. I went to meetings. People had to shadow me. They were going to see their boyfriend or whatever. I said, "Go ahead, I'm going to a meeting. I'll meet you back here on the corner at this time and we'll go back together to the house." And I'm going to meetings. And I went to meetings. Meetings. Reading the book. I was in the room with six other women. I was getting down on my knees and I was asking for help. Every morning, and getting on my knees every night and saying thank you. And when I would get done, they would all be chit-chatting about their boyfriend, about their hair, about their nails, about their jewelry, about this, about that. And then all of a sudden, when I would get down on my knees, the room would get quiet. And pretty soon, the next one start getting down on her knees with me. And the next one got down on her knees. Then before you know it, we had a little prayer, "Help us." Then they're going to meetings. They start going to meetings with me. And one woman just died in recovery last year. She was with me since that time in that place. my life is so good. Doors opened up for me immediately. Immediately. Yes, I got in the way. Yes, I stayed out of relationships, but I did not stay away from sex. Okay? See, I thought sex was love. You had to take me from day one and reteach me. Not reteach me, learn me, or whatever the word would be. I had to learn. I didn't know anything. I knew nothing. You had to show me everything about how to live. Everything. So I'm having sex, and it's funny, we're all still clean today. We're all still clean. We were a little group that ran around incestually, and we ran the meetings, and we went to Eaton Park, and then at night we went home, and we jumped in the bed, then we all split up and went back to our places, and then the next morning we got up and went to meetings. And I'm not here to say don't do it. Because I will never tell you don't do something here. I don't. Everybody's journey has been different of what I've watched over the years. I've listened to a million journeys. I don't think any of them have been bad or mistakes. I don't think any of them have been. Unless it's the fatal one of picking up. I've learned so much. I didn't learn when it's going good for me and I'm behaving myself. I don't learn then. I learn when I make, if I don't even like calling them mistakes, I like calling them like learning curves. Like a learning, like the therapeutic community I was in where I wore a cardboard sign. I'm a no good junkie. Learning experiences. That's what they called them, learning, L-E's, learning experiences. But so we did that for a while, but here's what happened. I started developing a conscience. This doesn't feel good anymore. But I didn't know how to stop. This doesn't feel good. I was degrading myself. Even though we all didn't know it, but I felt it. I was degrading myself. So I started praying about it. Talk to my sponsor, of course. I've never kept secrets. Never from a sponsor. Never from people in my life. I tell it. I'm an open book. And have been. I'm an open book. There was one time in my recovery I started to keep secrets. I got so scared. And I had to pray for the courage to tell. And I got it. I told. It was ridiculous. I raised my hand in a meeting. And I told on myself in this meeting. And you know how most people, you go somewhere and somebody's head's going, well, nobody was doing that. But they were like this. It was 6 and 7. Well, not 7. I started doing things here I never did in music. Feel good. What happened was, I don't even know where I was. But anyways. Sex. But I prayed, God stop me. God stop me. Help me. Stop me. Help me. Stop me. I started to feel like I know where this is leading to. Feel bad about myself, go get high. Feel bad about myself, go get high. And I just started praying, God, help me, help me, help me. Of course, I'm sharing with the women and a couple guys in my life. I'm sharing with them what's going on. And one day, you know, we ran the meetings all day, get home, call, what are you wearing? Come on, Don. You know, I run Don. You know, do your thing, roll over. And I went like this, I'm done. I'm done. It's over. It's over. And it was over. I did the same thing with stealing. My first year in recovery, stealing. I justified it by saying, I'm spending $30 on groceries. I'm allowed to steal deodorant and shampoo. They owe it to me. I'm getting better. I don't have stakes down my pants anymore. The same thing with that. Pray about it. Pray about it. See, I surrounded myself with people, and not even knowing it, with people that knew we need each other, but we need a higher power. We need a higher power to restore us to sanity. And I got plugged into that power, and I was godless. I remember coming to a meeting one time years ago, and somebody said, God, it was like I was the exorcist. Really, I felt like somebody threw fire, gasoline on me and set me on fire. And I was like, ooh. But that experience in itself opened me up. And then your experiences with that opened me up more. The gradual, the resistance, everything opened me up. Your faith. When you share, when you told your story, every story in here opened me up. Thank God we don't have the same story. And what happened was, I just kept coming to meetings. And I wound up, Billy again said, I was cleaning houses. We clean houses here. I cleaned Patty. Patty didn't remember. I cleaned houses. Everybody would give me a house to clean. I had a bag of rags, a bag of cleaning products, a set of headphones, and I walked. And if the house was a little too far, I took the bus. And one house led to another, and another house led to another house. Now I'm starting to feel good. I'm giving my mother money. Now I'm starting to pay my way. I'm starting to pay back. Things are happening. I'm stopping to treating myself bad. I'm paying my way. I'm starting to feel good about myself. We move in. Me and my girlfriend, Colleen, who I grew up with, she was in the program. She was my first sponsor. We're sitting in a meeting. We had talked about getting our own place. We'll hear this guy comes up to us, Eddie S., comes up to us and says, heard you girls are looking for a place. Wait, we and Colleen look. It's God. You know, so many things happen like that, like the coincidences that weren't coincidences. And I go, it's God. And he said, we're going to India for a year. We need somebody to sublet our place in Highland Park. You girls, I heard you're looking for a place. You went, yes. So we take his place in Highland Park. First thing we run in, open a cupboard. There's food. It's food. It was beautiful. It was going into Highland Park. We had a laid out place. It was a Victorian house. Food, music, everything. And we lived there for a year. And he came home 2 months earlier and calls us up. He goes, hey, girls, I'm home. I went, oh, no, you said a year. I was very salty about that. Like he was coming into my home. And then me and Colleen moved into another place, to the house. I lived with her. We lived together first 4 years. Best thing I did for myself. We went to the dances and danced like kids and girls. And like we never, because I never went to a prom. Never went on a date. 30 years old when I got clean. Never went on a date. Never went to a prom. Never went on a date. See, this thing will rob you of just life memories and good times. And I never had those good times. I started so young, not that anybody else hasn't either, but I mean, I just think about that sometimes and think, wow, wow. We did everything we did together like we were growing up again. We even had a stalker. A guy climbed the second floor, used to peep in our windows. I thought she was lying. We went to the dance one night at Club Alternatives, and I thought she was lying. She kept saying, there's some guy peeping in our window. I go, get the hell out of here. I go, you're dramatic. See, I was very, it took me a long time to start feeling. I was numb. Here we put Potter out on the little landing. We come in from the dance one night, and we're just BSing, we're laughing, talking, we're getting ready to go to bed. I look over, I see this. The police came. I mean, it was all fun. We was growing up. We had so much fun. The police came. He was so good looking. We wanted him to stay. But there were big footprints on the potter, you know. My son, no, he didn't talk to me. No, he didn't. He was 15 when I got clean. This is very touchy for me. 15 when I got clean. Missed 15 years. Proms, dating, education, family, father dying, no communication. He hated me. I killed him. I crushed him. I crushed my dad. Crushed him. Nothing, nothing with any meaning, you know, when I got clean. Nothing with any purpose or meaning. My son's 15 years old. He hates me. He hates me. I get it. I finally get it. I'm clean and I get it. I'm watching people get their kids back. This ain't happening for me. It's not happening. And I get it. I finally am not pushing myself on him. Because guess what you told me? Pray about it. Pray about it. Give it to God. So I would pray to God, you got this. Oh, and then you gave me some more truth. What are you going to do if he doesn't ever come to you? And I said, I'm going to stay here. I'm staying here. He came after 7 years. I kept praying he came. I got to make amends verbally, and I got to make living amends. I made him all throughout. When he first started coming, I let him talk bad to me, and then that stopped. I had to stand up for myself. The day I stood up for myself was the day that he began to respect me. I let him beat me up for a couple years, and I said, enough is enough. If I could cut off limbs and take it back, I would. I can't. If you want to hold on to this, that's your problem. I can't do it anymore. I can't hold on to this anymore. And we became even closer. He came around to a lot of the little functions and parties I had. People got to know him. Meanwhile, he ended up going to school. He put himself through school. My son is like, I mean, the prize. He's the prize. He put himself through school. He's a narcotics detective. He's badass, too. He is badass. My son is badass. He's a good father. He's a good husband. He's a good provider. We haven't talked in 9 years. I do not know my grandchildren. I don't blame myself. I do not beat myself up because I did everything I could for living amends. It's his wife. I told her she wanted my story. I gave her my story. She sucked me in. And then she don't want me involved in their life. And I told him, I will never interfere with your happiness. You did not have a family. You never had a family. His dad's still out there on the street. Never gave him a quarter. I said, you did not have a family. I will never interfere with your happiness. It's just the way it is. See, I didn't get clean. God just didn't say, well, Roberta's had a rough life. We're going to give her like some good stuff here because she deserves it. He did give me good stuff, but not the way I thought. I wanted my son. When I got here, I wanted my son. I wasn't looking for husbands or anything like that. I wanted my son, and it didn't happen. And I look at it like this. I was gone. His first half, and this is, you know, who knows? I don't know what's going to happen. People say, don't lose hope. I go, I can't hold on to that hope because sometimes hope hurts. So I kind of just, instead of hope, I have acceptance. This is what it is. This is what it is today. And it's funny because all the women I sponsor have children. So I get all the kids. I take them to the pool. I hang out with the kids. I love the little kids. I got a job. Billy said to me one day, "Do you think it's time to get a real job?" I went, a job. I went for a job. They said, "We're opening up a center for women and children. We think you'd be good there." I went, "I can't do that." They said, "Yes, you can. Go over to the thing and put in the thing." And they called me. They interviewed me. They said, "We want you to start Monday. Do you have a driver's license?" There was my ad. I went, "Oh, no, I don't have a driver's license." I was kind of glad. I wanted to keep cleaning houses because I was comfort there. And they said, "Well, if you get your license back, we'll give you the job." I ran back to the group. I said, "See, they're not going to hire me." I twisted it all up. "They're not going to hire me because I don't even drive anything back." They said, "Go down to Bodak's office, down on Butler Street, Senator Bodak. Ask his secretary, look up, see what you need." Because they said, "What do you need to get your license?" I said, "Thousands of dollars, thousands of dollars, thousands. It'll never happen." Went down there. I listened to the group. The power greater than myself that restores me to sanity. Ran down there, Mary Kay, "What do I need to get my license back?" She come out, $42. So I got a job. Feeling better and better and better about myself. Feeling better. Still don't fully believe that I'm not in love with myself yet. I'm not loving myself yet, but you are. You are, and I feel it. You're loving me. You're loving me up. You're rubbing me down. You're loving me up. You're telling me what to do. You're showing me where to go. You're showing me how to live. You're doing this for me. I'm involved in service, H&I. I'm in all the H&I commitments. Avery Street was packed. People were lines to get a commitment. Lines. My first commitment was stamp and literature. I had to wait in line to get a commitment. And my turn came up. It was like I hit the powerball. I was so happy I got a commitment. And this is all happening. I'm feeling better and better and better about myself. I'm paying my mother. I'm paying my way. I'm paying my bills. I'm buying food. I'm not stealing anymore. I'm praying in the morning. I'm praying at night. I work the steps. I saw my patterns. I saw my setups to get high. I know my defects. I see them. I feel them. When they come up, I feel them. I'm beginning to know in here when I'm doing right and wrong. I have an answer now. It's called a 10th step. Now I can clear it today. Now I can clear it up. My spirit's like alive. It's alive. I'm feeling this thing. I don't know. I don't get scared when I feel bad feelings. I don't regret hurt feelings. I love it all. I'm alive. I'm alive. I start work and I bought my own little house after 10 years. Not that that's what this is about, but what it's about is being up, stand up and being accountable and more being honest, forgiving, amends, all the stuff in the steps, all the principles, honesty, open-mindedness, willingness. I don't know how to buy a house, but I buy a house. I put little money aside. I go to the little workshops. You're teaching me things. I buy my little house. I'm in the closing. There's a little house, a row of brick house that they kept bringing me back to. I'm going, "I don't want a row of brick house on Penn Avenue. I grew up on Penn." Now I'm like being picky. But I kept getting led back to this house, and the elderly people in it said, "We prayed you get this house because we grew 3 generations of people in this house, and there's just something about you. We want you to have this house." And I'm thinking, I'm going to have this house. And I'm in the closing of that house, and I'm crying. And they're going, "Oh, look, she's crying. She's happy. She bought a house." It wasn't that I bought a house. I wasn't crying because I bought a house. I was crying because I was overwhelmed with what you've given me to be able to be in positions like this, growing up, doing what I'm supposed to do, going to work, paying bills, living a normal life. When I used to look at the lady that took their kids to school, and I used to hate her. And I'd look at people going to work and I used to hate them. And here I'm being able to do this because of you. This is as big as you want it to be here. It's as big as you want it to be. My gifts are all in here. 10 years, I picked up my key tag. I ran up there, I picked that key tag up 10 years. And guess what happened? And that's, you know, it's funny. We just keep on showing up and go through the motions and things happen that we need exactly when we need it, but we don't even know that that's what's coming. And I picked the key tag up and all of a sudden I felt it. I love myself. I love myself. And that was a miracle, and it still is. I love myself enough to not do crazy stuff anymore, to not hurt other people anymore, to make amends when I'm supposed to make amends, to do a 10th step, to keep involved in service, to call my sponsor, to keep showing up, to make the coffee, to wipe the tables. I love myself. I love myself, and that's because of you. You loved me till I could love myself. And love was so foreign to me. It was so foreign to me. I never had it before you. Never. This is the best thing that's ever happened to me. I live by myself. I take care of myself. I have you all the time. All the time. You're with me all the time. I'm very involved. I go to a lot of meetings. My H&I's at a detox. I love the rubber slippers and the blankets. And I just love this. I just love this. I can't even say enough about narcotics. It's the only thing that ever worked for me. Only thing that's ever worked. There's people in this room that are unbelievable. I mean, I could feel it. This is the best thing that's ever happened to me. I don't ever want to go back to where I came from. And I'm not going to. I'm going to die clean. I'm dying clean. And it says it in the book. We have never seen a person relapse that lives this program. Let's talk about that. I love you all. Thank you. And I'm done.